A few weeks ago, I was sitting on my back deck trying to read a book. Even though that is one of my favorite things in the world to do, I was only trying to read and failing because I was completely distracted. Between two of the wooden slats on my deck, there was a spider busily working, weaving a web. And the sun was coming through the branches of the tree and hitting the spider silk and just making it glisten and glitter. It was beautiful. The web was almost done. It was this delicate, lacy beauty and very weak-seeming. But did you know that despite its lacy, delicate, weak-seeming appearance, spider silk is actually one of the strongest natural substances on Earth? One variety of spider silk is 10 times stronger than Kevlar, which is the material used to create bulletproof vests. Strength is often found in surprising places in nature. Ounce per ounce, the horned dung beetle is the strongest animal on Earth. It can pull 1,141 times its own weight, which would be like you or I grabbing onto two fully loaded semi-trucks and pulling them along. In nature, things that seem weak are often surprisingly strong. And I wonder if that is true because our Creator delights in putting strength in weak-seeming packages. In fact, God even demonstrates strength in weakness. You guys might be going, really? God weak? I don't think so. But indeed, at the outset of our text today, God seems weak. While you turn to 1 Samuel 5, let me set the stage. In 1 Samuel 4, Israel went to battle against their long-standing enemies, the Philistines, and they lost. Badly. The elders of Israel put their heads together and decided they wanted a rematch, and they knew just how to win this time. They were going to bring the Ark of the Lord into battle with them. This was the symbol of God's presence. The Ark of the Lord had been with them when the Jordan River parted. It had helped fell the walls of Jericho. Surely, if they brought the Ark of the Lord into battle with them, God must show up and they would have victory. It was certain. He would show up and help them. The Philistines agreed. When the Philistines heard that the Ark of the Lord had come into camp, they said, "A God has come into the camp. Woe to us, for nothing like this has happened before. Woe to us. Who can deliver us from the power of these mighty gods? These are the gods who struck the Egyptians with every sort of plague in the wilderness." But the Philistines fought, and to their surprise and Israel's, the Philistines won. They captured the Ark of the Lord, and both the Ark and God's presence, his glory, departed Israel. By the cultural norms of the day, when you won in battle, it meant your God had won in battle. So the Philistines reached the very natural conclusion that the God of Israel had been defeated by their God, Dagon. The God of Israel had never seemed weaker. His reputation is in tatters. So we arrive in chapter 5 in dismay. The magnificent God of Israel is captive. Whatever will he do? Who will rescue him? As I read, listen for how God shows his strength, even in this moment when he seems so weak. When the Philistines captured the Ark of God, they brought it from Ebenezer to Ashdod. Then the Philistines took the Ark of God and brought it into the house of Dagon and set it up beside Dagon. And when the people of Ashdod rose early the next day, behold, Dagon had fallen face downward on the ground before the Ark of the Lord. So they took Dagon and put him back in his place. But when they rose early on the next morning, behold, Dagon had fallen face downward on the ground before the Ark of the Lord. And the head of Dagon and both his hands were lying cut off on the threshold. Only the trunk of Dagon was left to him. This is why the priests of Dagon and all who enter the house of Dagon do not tread on the threshold of Dagon in Ashdod to this day. The hand of the Lord was heavy against the people of Ashdod, and he terrified and afflicted them with tumors, both Ashdod and its territory. And when the men of Ashdod saw how things were, they said, "The ark of the God of Israel must not remain with us, for his hand is hard against us and against Dagon our God." So they sent and gathered together all the lords of the Philistines and said, "What shall we do with the ark of the God of Israel?" They answered, "Let the ark of the God of Israel be brought around to Gath." So they brought the ark of the God of Israel there. But after they had brought it around, the hand of the Lord was against the city, causing a very great panic. And he afflicted the men of the city, both young and old, so that tumors broke out on them. So they sent the ark of the God to Ekron. But as soon as the ark of God came to Ekron, the people of Ekron cried out, "They have brought around to us the ark of the God of Israel to kill us and our people." They sent, therefore, and gathered together all the lords of the Philistines and said, "Send away the ark of the God of Israel and let it return to its own place that it may not kill us and our people." For there was a deathly panic throughout the whole city. The hand of God was very heavy there. The men who did not die were struck with tumors, and the cry of the city went up to heaven. Here's what I want to convince you of today. When God seems weak, he's strong. Even at times when God seems weak, he's strong. And a few of you might be thinking, yes, sometimes I do think God's weak, so I can't wait for you to convince me that he's always strong. But the rest of you are like, I know God's strong. Don't need to listen to this. I'm just going to check out for the next 20 minutes and focus on the fact that my stomach is rumbling. So hold on. Check back in with me. Let me convince you to listen. I'm with you. I too bristle at the suggestion that God's weak. I know God's strong. But do you ever feel like he's not showing his strength? Like you wanted him to show up and he didn't? For the Israelites, God's absence resulted in their weakness on the battlefield. And today, there are times we wish God would show up and show off, and he doesn't. This text will show us that even when God seems weak, he's strong. Even when he seems absent, he's present. And he shows his strength in all the ways that matter most. And we'll see that through God's interactions with Dagon and the Philistines. When through God's afflicting of his enemies, he will show that verses 1 to 6, 5, he's strong against Dagon, and verses 6 to 12, he's strong against the Philistines. Let's start with God versus Dagon. In verses 1 to 2, the Philistines have the Ark of God, and they bring it deep into Philistine territory to the city of Ashdod. And they present the Ark to Dagon in Dagon's temple. This is what the Philistines did to defeated enemies. Later, they'll defeat Saul and they'll bring his skull into Dagon's temple. They are presenting the Ark of God to Dagon like a defeated enemy. He's a prisoner of war. But God's like, if you'll allow me to be playful, God's in this temple and he's like, "Hold my drink. Oh, wait, there's no one else here. Never mind, I got this." And that night, Dagon falls on his face before the Ark of the Lord. When the Philistines get up the next morning, they don't quite take the hint. Maybe it was just wind inside. So no matter, they set Dagon back up. And the next night, God makes sure there's no room for misunderstanding. This time, Dagon falls on his face again, and his hands break off, his head breaks off. All that's left of him is a trunk. In a direct contest, God versus Dagon, God wins. He kills his enemy, Dagon. And by winning, God proved that the cultural norms of the day were wrong. Israel may have been defeated in battle by the Philistines, but that did not mean that God was defeated by Dagon. Far from it, it actually shows us that God let Israel lose. It shows that the ark is not a talisman, and God will not be manipulated. God has set the record straight. He's restored his reputation. He's proved his strength against Dagon. And from the context, we know that was a surprise to the Philistines and to Israel. And I can't help but wonder, would we have been surprised? It's easy to think, well, no, of course not. I would have expected God to be victorious. But I wonder. Let me tell you a story that my grandfather used to tell. I'm going to tell it in his voice. And he was a believer who dearly loved the Lord. In the early 1900s, many foreign missionaries went to China and served faithfully, helping win people to the Lord. Until 1949. In 1949, the revolution swept across the nation, and foreign missionaries were expelled from China, leaving a fledgling and weak-seeming church. China went dark. As Christians outside the nation of China, we didn't know what was happening. We were afraid that atheism had defeated God and that this tiny little church had been snuffed out and no one was hearing about Jesus any longer. But that wasn't the case. Many years later, we would learn that after the missionaries left, God continued to work. The Chinese church grew in numbers and in strength. My grandfather always told that story with a strong sense of surprise at the end. And he's far from the only one who tells or told the story in that way. I love that story about the growth of the Chinese church. I find it amazing and encouraging. But surprising? Should it be surprising? It shouldn't be, should it? Would we have been surprised? I wonder. What circumstances in our world today make you feel like God might be losing? Or like God isn't showing up, not defending his reputation very well? Maybe you're thinking of big trends that seem to threaten God, like the rise of the religious nuns in America, alongside shrinking numbers of people who claim to be Christian and attend church. God's not looking very strong there, is he? God, your reputation is taking a hit. Well, whether it's those big trends or regional trends or trends in our ministry that make us feel like, God, you're not showing up to defend your reputation, this text affirms God's got this. If he was strong against Dagon and Baal and Asherah, then he's strong today against Allah and Buddha. He's strong against pluralism and nebulous spirituality. He's strong against self-centered humanism and materialism. He's strong against Christian nominalism. If God seems weak against any of that, he only seems it. He may let people think him weak for a time, but don't be surprised when he sets the record straight. He's got this. Even when he seems weak, he's strong. Well, having shown his strength against Dagon, God moves on to the Philistines in verse 6 to 12. God versus the Philistines. We're still wondering what's to become of the Ark of the Lord. How will it get home? Will Samuel come rescue it like Abraham once rode to the rescue of Lot? After all, God sometimes shows up in pillars of cloud and fire, but those things don't move heavy objects, right? God seems helpless to get his ark home. So what does he do? With a strong, heavy hand, he terrifies and afflicts the Philistines in Ashdod with tumors. Now the Philistines are catching on. They recognize that the ark of the God of Israel is causing this. So they send it to Gath, whose people break out in tumors and panic and send it on to Ekron. The ark is a hot potato that the Philistines can't get rid of fast enough. But the movement of the ark is not random. Look up here for a minute. This is Philistine territory, and Israel is kind of around it to two sides. The battle took place to the north of Philistine territory, and when they captured the ark, they brought it down deep into Philistine territory in the middle to the city of Ashdod. Then they send the ark to Gath, towards Israel. And when the Gathites get rid of it, they send it north to Ekron, just on the border of Israel. And they had more cities down in the south. They could have sent it south away from Israel, but they don't. Why? Because this movement is not random. It's like God is prodding the Philistines to take his ark home. Send it this way. Now send it this way. God's got this. Look at how his hand is described. Dagon might have lost his hands, but God still got his, and it's a strong hand. It's heavy against them, verse 6. It's hard against them, verse 7. And it's very heavy, verse 11. God is flexing his muscles and showing his strength by afflicting the Philistines, the historic enemy of his people. The Lord pushes against the Philistines to take his ark home. And in Ekron, God makes sure there's no room for misunderstanding. The ark is close to Israel now, but close is not good enough. So in Ekron, the tumors begin to be accompanied by death. And the Philistines in Ekron get it. In a deathly panic, they cry out, "Send away the ark of God of Israel and let it return to its own place." So in chapter 6, the Philistines will set the ark on a driverless cart pulled by two cows. And God, without any human help, will guide the cows back to Israel. God didn't need anyone to come rescue his ark. He might have seemed helpless, but he was moving. He might have seemed weak, but he was strong. And sisters, in ministry, if God is strong in weakness, then we too can boast in our weakness. Maybe you have a weakness that makes life and ministry difficult. Well, God delights in putting strength in weak-seeming packages. Maybe your ministry seems weak. Ministry is hard work, and we rightly work hard at it. We pour ourselves out into it, and we should work hard. But God's ways often seem weak by cultural standards. His ways are often charged with being irrelevant for people today. We might be tempted to come to God's rescue. What influences your philosophy of ministry? Do you do things in the surprising ways that God calls us to? Or are you influenced by the latest trends and best practices? Some of that stuff might not be bad. But do you depend on them for the health of your ministry, like there's some kind of magical ark in your midst? Maybe other people, maybe you feel the pressure from outside, from other people to follow, chase trends in ministry rather than doing things in the surprising ways God calls us to. Do you let yourself be pulled away from God's ways? Don't. God doesn't need help. The gospel and his word is already relevant. It's already strong. And in proclaiming it, we have an urgent task before us. Did you notice in this text that the Philistines, despite seeing God's strong hand at work in their midst, they keep him at arm's length? He stays, throughout the text, the God of Israel. And in verse 5, we see that to this day, the day this book is written, generations later, they still have this temple of Dagon, and they're still serving Dagon. They never make the Lord their God. What you do, what we do in calling people to make the Lord their God is urgent. Discipleship through the teaching of the word is urgent. Be re-energized for these tasks. And be encouraged. Your ministry doesn't have to be flashy. God delights in shaming the strong with the weak. He's demonstrated it. Even when he seems weak, he's strong. So is this chapter just a flash in the pan? After 1 Samuel 5, are we going to see God show his strength forever from here on out? Well, no, it will only take a few chapters until we see strength in weakness again. God will show it through David, most famously when he strengthens a young shepherd to defeat a giant. And David, as God's covenant king, will many times show weakness, won't he? But David is not God's ultimate demonstration of strength in weakness. Hundreds of years later, God will again demonstrate strength in weakness. He will join the ranks of humanity as a helpless infant. From heaven he came, helpless babe, entered the world, his glory veiled. But the incarnation is still not God's ultimate demonstration of strength and weakness. Jesus of Nazareth would embrace a path of ministry weakness. He would scorn the path of power offered by Satan. And over the course of his 3-year ministry, there would be breakout moments, feeding the 5,000, walking on water. But then, the ultimate moment of strength and weakness would come. Jesus, God in flesh, on the cross? That made no sense to the people who were watching. "If you are the Son of God, come down from the cross," they cried. But he didn't. Death defeated Jesus, so it seemed. The disciples thought so. They cowered in a locked room out of fear for the Jewish leaders who had been victorious in their plot to execute Jesus. Jesus was left alone, not in the temple of Dagon, but in a tomb for 3 days. And in that moment, when he seemed utterly defeated, he rose victorious from the grave. When he seemed weakest, Christ demonstrated his greatest strength. Be amazed. Be encouraged, not surprised. Jesus is our Lord, our victor, and he's got you. You can glory in weakness because Christ was strong when it mattered most. And one day, even those moments of seeming weakness will be gone. They'll be banished once for all because Jesus isn't done. He's coming back. And when Jesus returns, those circumstances that make us feel like God is losing, those will be gone. The times we feel like God's not showing up, those will be gone. The things that make us cringe for God's reputation, those will be in the past. God's got those things. He's got it all. When Jesus returns, he won't seem weak anymore. The breakouts of strength from his earthly ministry will be on display full time, 24/7. And when he returns, 2 Thessalonians 1, he will afflict not just the Philistines, but all who do not know God and all who do not obey the gospel of our Lord Jesus. And he will be glorified in his saints and marveled at amongst all who believe. In that day, it will be easy to affirm, he may have seemed weak, but he's strong indeed.